Hello and a very warm welcome to the Fixture Congestion Podcast, the nasal decongestant spray for busy football fans. I am your host Edward, and in today's two-part episode, we will be discussing Serie A through fish metaphors and La Liga. The first of our two topics will be the Serie A. With me, I have freelance football writer and host of the Seriously Good podcast, Casey Evans. He will help me discuss the state of Italian football at the moment and how it might look like in the future. Hello, Casey.
Hi, thanks for having me on.
Now, we all know about the Serie A in the 90s, but we all know the Italians also loved a bit of scandal, right? I've recently written a small listicle, which I've turned into a TikTok video. And whilst writing that, I found out that in the 80s, the Italian FA, after another scandal, decided to randomly assign referees to football games. And in that season, Hellas Verona won their maiden championship. It seems like they haven't learned anything, because the most recent reports out of Italy state that Roma, Lazio, and Salernitana's offices have just been raided, due to some financial irregularities. Casey, what's the newest update on this one?
Well, obviously, it was a couple of days ago that was the all three of those clubs were raided. I think there was another report that came out that was a mention in a phone call / email. There was a mention of Roma's Luca Pellegrini deal, which was with Juventus, which has kind of linked them back to that. And this is why a lot of these raids are happening. In general, there's not really been much been said. It's one of those big things that there's been rumours. Obviously, Juventus are the ones who have been really in the news. They've been the ones that have actually been charged, and they're now having an appeal and stuff with that. But there have been rumours that other clubs have partaken in the same sort of thing, and that it probably is goes a lot further than just one club doing it. So at the moment, obviously, the outcome of that Juventus case will reflect what happens if anything is found in those three raids. But at the moment, we have to kind of see, because it's like the process. They're in lots of different stages at the moment. They're trying to figure out the final touches on the claims against one club, which will then reflect on other clubs, but then other clubs are coming forward. So it's kind of a little bit of a mess at the moment, which is really common for Italian football, unfortunately.
Yeah, sounds like just another day at the office. I remember that big scandal they had in the US with the Volkswagen diesel cars, right, a while ago. And it later came out that basically all manufacturers did this, but Volkswagen were the ones who took the fall and got the most media attention. Is it the same here with Juventus? Is it the case that basically everyone in Italy is doing this, and Juventus were just the biggest name that got caught?
Obviously, I'm not gonna say that everyone's doing this of it, but I don't think it is just the Juventus. I think is the case. It's what's going to happen, and obviously investigations will be made. I think the thing is that it's a bit different in terms of the business side, like with the Volkswagen thing, because that was the business side of it. It's competition, and competition is obviously they're regulated not just by the league themselves, but by UEFA, by FIFA. So it kind of obviously reflects of, well, if more people in the league are doing it, how are they doing it in terms of European competitions as well? Obviously, this is just another scandal, as we've already said. And it's annoying how it keeps happening, because obviously it seems to always come at a point where Serie A has kind of either been getting back to where it should be or at the top of where it should be. Obviously, we all know Calciopoli. That was a really big scandal that kind of ruined Italian football momentum for many years. And it's probably one of the reasons why they're in the sort of financial situations that they are today, that some clubs seem to think that they need to do this, and they need to do stuff like the Super League, which we'll probably talk about soon.
Yeah, I'm keeping that one for the end as sort of the icing on the cake. You've mentioned Juventus. We all know they've got 15 points docked. But what I want to know is if you know of any new developments regarding that points deduction, maybe if they've appealed it, and also what punishments are facing the people involved, and what are they being charged with, and have they been charged with it?
So technically at the moment they have been charged with it. It's alleged financial irregularities. Obviously the big one was Fabio Paratici. He's moved away from Juventus now, and he's been given a 30-month ban from football from all football, which FIFA extended. Obviously, he was originally in the Italian leagues, but it was extended to all football, which is why he's left his role at Tottenham. Obviously, on April 19th, Juventus are appealing this. They're going against the claims. Obviously, their board's all left now, so it's kind of just a bit of a new shop. And this would also affect the 15-point deduction that they've already got, which will put them back into a European place, which is probably one of the big things that they're looking for at the moment, because of the financial implications of not being in Europe next season will be massive for them. But yeah, in terms of that, it'll be April 19th, I think, is the date off the top of my head that case will kind of be decided. And then I think that there are some other charges that the Italian FA and Italian authorities want to bring against them in terms of some other points of their accounts. But at the moment, they're trying to finalise this one first before they make any further things. So it could get better for Juventus depending on the situation, but it could also get a lot worse.
That was what I was going to ask you, if this points deduction is final or not. And since you've already answered this, I'd like to hear your opinion on it. I know it's maybe stupid of us to speculate on such a big case, but do you think the points deduction will be upheld?
Personally, I think it will be. Obviously, I don't want to really speculate because it could change and there could be new information. There's always been a kind of issue, because obviously I'm not sure which one this is for. I know there's two separate charges. One was for the financial irregularities around transfers, and there's one around financial irregularity with wages over COVID. I don't know which one's being brought and which one is in the future to be brought. I should have probably checked that before I started talking, but. Yeah, I think it will be upheld. There was obviously, from a fan perspective, I think there was kind of a lot of deals that people looked at and went, that doesn't particularly make sense. I remember Pjanic Arthur, the Barcelona swap deal, didn't really make much sense when both players were being valued at I think it was 60 to 70 million, which was kind of insane based on both of those players' profiles or where they were in their career. And I think it'll be upheld, because obviously, across football at the moment, there seems to be a kind of general push from football clubs to get their house in order and try and make the point that their leagues can be regulated by themselves, because governments have come in and said that we need to come in and actually help you out here, because you don't seem to be able to get your house in order. You obviously have seen this recently with the government white paper in the Premier League. And then obviously a couple of days later, there was the charges brought against City for their own financial problems. And that was a 5-year investigation. Obviously, this is a little bit more recent, a little bit more, oh, here's a couple of things over a couple of years. It's not as widespread with the number of charges that were against City. But I think it is a case of leagues are trying to get their house in order, because obviously they know that if this Super League that everyone keeps pushing for happens, they are going to lose a lot.
So basically, this whole ordeal that the own clubs are putting their league through is basically because of a lack of money. Because
yes,
it's a big come down from the 90s, where people say Florentino Perez came up with the Galacticos project, but it was already there. That was Serie A in the 90s. Now, right now, from what I can gather and from what I've read and listened to, the main issue, one of the main issues with Italian football, is the problem with stadiums. The fact that they're old, decrepit, and no club in Serie A, except for Juventus, owns their own stadium. So they don't get those huge gate receipts, especially the ones for the hospitality suites, like where all the sheikhs and billionaires come to spend their money. I've heard that Roma are currently building a new stadium for themselves, but are stuck in miles of red tape. And there was even a huge project to renovate or knock down and rebuild a San Siro, which should have been a joint venture. But since then, Milan has gone off on their own because Inter has financial issues of their own. And it's their ownership that I want to talk to you about. Now, I know the owner, the chairman of the Suning Group, is putting the club up for sale due to the huge reshuffle in China in regards to football. We hear every day the bids for Manchester United, Liverpool, all the big names, but I personally haven't heard of any new movement on the Inter front. Do you know anything about that?
I haven't really heard that much. I think obviously, like at the moment, as you said, there's a kind of like a hierarchy in sense of these clubs are available, who should buy them. I think the Sunning Group bought Inter Milan for quite a big chunk of change, and they'll probably want a return on that. Obviously, recently I wrote something on the Chinese Super League and where it was in 2023, and the Sunning Group was a big part of that because obviously Jiangsu Sunning won the league and then a few months later had to shut their doors, basically disband their club because of financial problems, which was the fact that they had spent millions, even billions, on players and infrastructure and all this sort of stuff to try and make Chinese football massive, but then it all collapsed around them. And obviously this is then reflected on their ownership of Inter. And I think that that's kind of one of those things. It is the case that they'll probably will get bought, but it is the matter at the moment that the Premier League is the big fish. And this is what reflects on everything. This is the problem with football at the moment, is that the Premier League is the big fish, and the Premier League is the big fish because it made itself the big fish. It was the small fish. It then built itself up. It ate all the other fishes. I'm really stuck on the fish analogy. We'll leave it there, though.
No problem. Everybody loves fish.
But yeah, it's kind of this thing of they built themselves up. And I think other leagues, obviously, a bit in Spanish football, they were too focused on Real Madrid and Barcelona, and they kind of left the rest of the league behind, and which is now the fact that now Barcelona and Real Madrid are kind of running themselves into a corner. The rest of the league is not strong enough to support that league. In Italy, as I said before, Calciopoli really derailed Italian football's growth and the Italian football's sort of attractiveness to investors and to sponsors because it was so heavily attached to this cheating scandal. So you're kind of looking at it now and everyone's kind of trying to figure out how to catch up with the Premier League and build it. But the problem is that there's so much wrong with how the system is built. Like, obviously, I said that the league didn't really focus on building the league up as a attractive prospect. The stadium thing we just mentioned. I remember Inter and AC had the problem that the red tape that they were having around the San Siro was so big because they got the government in Milan got so much money from the San Siro. They were basically waylaying them because they wanted to build their own stadiums that they owned to get their own gate disputes, and they would lose that massive income, which was a massive thing back in the day. And obviously now it kind of has been that one club now needs to build something and one club now needs to stay in the San Siro. But I do think it is a massive problem that in the league that they don't own their own stadiums. I think that kind of is something that needs to happen or needs to make a change. But that is something that is so entrenched in bureaucracy and loads of red tape that isn't attached to football that I don't think will happen. And as this the running theme of this podcast will be, it's all about money. It's all about money and the fear of being irrelevant, which is the problem in football. And the problem is that everyone knows that in this day and age, you need money not to be irrelevant. So people are trying to find new ways to do it. And obviously, some want to build their own stadiums, which is a completely legitimate way. And then some of the other ones are the more alleged illegitimate ways that we've been talking about before.
Right. What I've seen in recent years, speaking of money, there's a huge influx of American money coming into Italy. Is that a solution? Or, you know, as a layman of Italian football, I watched, I enjoy it, I know the history of it, but couldn't there be an option, let's say, for the socios model, like they have in Spain, for the fans to take back their clubs?
Yeah, I think the thing is that there is loads of different models in football that work. I think the American ownership model is a good way to get back to where you need to be very quickly, because obviously there is a lot of money in America right now and a lot of people who are willing to spend it. And I think that's the case across the world. I think what most leagues and the Premier League probably realized very quickly was that, and why they were so far ahead, is the world was globalizing very quickly. And everyone wanted to get a slice of football because it was the biggest sport in the world. And they got owners from all over the world to come in and spend money on their clubs. And I think that other leagues kind of were in the situation of, well, we have our cultures and we have our understanding of what we want. We want to be Italian-owned businesses, or we in Spain, it was like we want to be fan-owned and Spanish, and we're very patriotic and we have our clubs. And I think there's now kind of an understanding that needs to be more external ownership in order to compete financially, because that's where the money is. The money is in these countries like America, it's in the Middle East, it's in so on and so forth. It was in China, as of the Sunning Group buying Inter Milan. The Socius model is good. It's just how you finance it, really, is the problem. And it's all, obviously, like, the thing is that you can't really push it through because of the fact is most leagues are dictated by ownerships, and ownerships don't want to lose their ownership of the club to a lesser amount than they bought it for. And obviously you have certain owners, like, say, De Laurentiis from Napoli, who is a billionaire in his own right, and also he's very proud to own that club and he wants to keep hold of that club. So I don't think he'd accept any money for that club. So it is kind of a lot of branches and a lot of tape that isn't always just as simple as saying one model or another model. It is a matter of, if this club is owned or if this club wants to be sold, you need to look at who wants to buy it, and you need to look at marketing yourself the best to these global owners.
Speaking of De Laurentiis and, you know, crazy Italian owners, I think the best way to exemplify the downfall of Serie A is the Berlusconi Galliani collection, not Galliani, the other one. Those two that were in charge of AC Milan and guided them through a hugely successful period. They've just said, we couldn't do it with Milan anymore, and that's why we're at Monza right now.
Yeah.
And again, I see some fans looking at the state of their clubs and maybe feeling some kind of despair. And I see this new, fresher, better thought out model of the Super League gaining traction. I'm wholly against it. And maybe now that I think of, we should also have had an Italian fan with us, because with you being English, there is a certain Premier League bias. But from where I see it, UEFA is corrupt and horrible. I'm not defending them. But these clubs, Barcelona, Real Madrid, and Juventus, two of them are mired in scandal, and they are basically asking for the whole of Europe and the whole of European football to upend themselves, reshuffle everything, just because they aren't profitable anymore.
Yeah, I mean,
how do you see it?
I mean, the thing is that I'll say this to try and be as unbiased as possible, is everyone's going to act in their own self-interest. That is the situation. The Premier League clubs will be against it because the Premier League is already profitable and turning over all this money. If it was a case of you could make more money and the Premier League would still be profitable, then it would still, the Premier League clubs might be more interested. But the Premier League, in its sense, knows that if it can keep its the money printing machine going, then it's happy. The problem with the Super League, I think, and how it was perceived, was it was these four clubs, as you just said. And these four clubs were the ones of the reputation of, we always spent a lot of money, and then we're now publicly not being able to spend a lot of money. Obviously, Barcelona's levers are comically memed constantly. And now we're asking for everyone else to come and join this league so we can make more money again. And it kind of just seemed like, well, why are you coming into our pockets to try and pay for your own bills? And it was one of those things. I just thought it was how it was perceived in the first place was, if it was put forward as, right, the Champions League as it exists is broken. We want to try and make a better system where the clubs benefit more, and we want to try and make a new place to replace the Champions League, and maybe we work it with UEFA, maybe we don't. This is the other thing. As I said, the problem with football is it's such a non-bureaucratic, it's like a non-political sport, but it's highly political, is the problem. Everyone wants to say, oh, I want to keep my politics out of sport. I just want to watch football. I just want to watch the best football. Sweet. The problem is to watch the best football, you have to go through layers and layers of bureaucracy and politics. If it was done the right way, I think maybe there would be more of a fan feeling towards doing it. But I do still think that you'd have to deal with the problem of UEFA will act in their own self-interest. So as I've already said, it's all self-interest. So they will be happy to say, no, we don't want this because it undermines the Champions League, which is our main moneymaker. So Yeah, it's such a weird thing to debate, because I think that obviously I'd like to see the world of football get more money spread out and be better and have more competitive leagues, because I like watching Serie A. Like you, I watch Serie A quite a lot. I try and watch other leagues as well. I've obviously watched a lot of Ligue 1 in the past. I've watched a lot of Spanish football in the past. Like, I've always tried to dip into other leagues to see how it's doing, and I'd love if they were more competitive and able to have their own sort of like league structure similar to the Premier League, or with the sort of quality and diversity of the Premier League. But it's one of those things where there is a lot of red tape, and there's a lot of red tape with everything.
For me, I think the biggest issue I have with the Super League is that its intentions are not pure. Its intentions are about money making. If they came out and said, listen, football right now, especially the Champions League, is kind of boring, because if you look back at the last decade, you've always had the same semi-finalist. It was always Real, Barca, Bayern, and some other team. Not every year, but pretty much so. If they came out and said, listen, we want to bring it back to the old days, when a club like Steaua Bucharest could have come in and won the whole thing, which would make for truly great entertainment. But you cannot see that thing nowadays. But right now, there's more of a push towards externalizing the Champions League or the Super League. So with games played in the Middle East, with games played in America, where I feel like the real fans are getting shortchanged, because they have to maybe fly halfway across the world to see their team in a Champions League semi-final or the Italian Super Cup.
Yeah, and I think the problem with the Super League originally as well is like what you said with the sort of the Steaua Bucharest and the sort of underdog stories of people coming in and doing well and winning it, was that the original plan was to monopolize it, was to pick all of the historically big clubs in the countries, all of the biggest owners, all of the people who were already making the most money, whether it was they weren't making the same amount of money as each other, but they were still making the most money in their respective leagues, and making a Super League out of them with no relegation. And then they said there was relegation, but at the same time, it's the fact of, well, okay, but they still have the most money and you're giving them more money. So it's probably a case of they won't get relegated that much, or if they'll just keep popping back in constantly. It won't be like a seismic shift over the next 5 years of the teams. So
looking into, let's say, the next 5 or 10 years, obviously everything in football, as in life, is cyclical.
Yes.
When one league falls, another one rises, and that one will fall at one point. The Italian teams this season, they're doing very well in the Champions League, and Napoli, if they can hang on to their players or use the money they get from them to make more smart investments like they did, they could start to rival the Premier League. Whereas, looking in from the outside, obviously as a foreigner, I see the Premier League based in a country that is not doing quite well at the moment. And for me, this has always been where the league is based. If the country goes well, I think automatically the league will go as well. Because we mustn't forget that the decay, the perceived decay of Serie A and La Liga also had to factor in the 2008 financial crisis, which affected both countries very hard. Do you think the new Brexit laws and the way the UK seems to be heading on a downward spiral will affect this new Premier League, and or is it too big to fall?
I don't think anything's ever too big to fall. I think that's one of the biggest things that everyone kind of misconceives, is that we always get into this situation of, oh, it's too big to fail. Nothing's ever too big to fail, because sometimes it just takes one seismic shift to change it. I think obviously but in the same sense, as a brand and as a sort of idea, I think the Premier League itself is very big. I think it obviously is allowed to, it could probably sustain itself. I think they've got Brexit allowances where they can kind of, there's work permit laws which have been brought into all football, but they've got allowances that allow them to bring players in. And bigger clubs still get away with bringing in players that probably don't really fit with the work permit laws on Brexit. But yeah, I think at the moment they've kind of separated out into a sense where they are above the cyclical, they've separated away from the cyclical nature as it exists, or how it has existed in the past. I think they're obviously, they've got the broadcast rights, they've got the globalization. Whether that changes or whether it changes over the next couple of years is something we'll have to see. I think obviously how games are broadcast is going to be very important. I think obviously this, we're in a digital age now with streaming, we're in, other companies are coming in. It's not just Sky and your general TV conglomerates anymore, it's more digital and how it's displayed. So maybe if a seismic shift in a league where they were like, we make it more accessible and more easier to watch, that might change it. And then they obviously monetize that well. And obviously legal things happen. Like you said, like there's always the big thing of a financial crash. And if Britain as a country becomes less livable, I think it would have to become considerably less livable with taxation rates, given the fact that people can just go abroad as much as they want now, if they've had the money. Then there might be a move away from the Premier League, and that obviously reflects on other countries. If other countries give better labour laws, better taxation laws on footballers, they could obviously attract them. So there's a lot of things that could affect it, but as it stands at the moment, I think the Premier League has broken away from the cycle of dropping away, but I do think that it does just take one big event to change it.
Now, I've asked you a few huge questions in this podcast, looking ahead maybe 10 years into the future. What I'd like to end with is some small predictions. And we're back with a look at Spain's current situation. Joining me is a person named La Liga Michael, and I think his parents kind of pigeonholed him into a career with that name. Hi, Michael. Welcome.
Hey, man. Thank you so much. Great to see you.
Okay, so now you're the La Liga expert. I want to run down through the league. And where else can we start but with Scandal FC Barcelona?
Uh-huh.
So at the beginning of the season, I read reports that due to their financial situation that's been talked a lot of over the years, they needed a good European run just to balance the book. Now, again, this hasn't worked out. They've got an early exit. And on top of that, they have this refereeing scandal where it has come out that under the former regime, they've made payments to a company owned by the head of the Spanish referees.
Mm-hmm.
Again, it looks in disarray. Gavi's contract is up in the air. Can they survive this latest crisis? Are there any more levers to pull? What do you know of the situation, Michael?
Yeah, it's complex, obviously. And there are two serious issues they're going through that are connected, but also pretty distinct. One is just the financial crisis that COVID exacerbated. Well, really, it goes back to Bartos' financial management, but the COVID lockdown has just exacerbated all those problems. So that's one issue. And then the scandal is just a black mark for them. No matter what comes of it, it's one of those things that will kill their reputation or hurt their reputation for a good bit of time. I'm very curious to see what happens in the summer. There aren't any more levers that they'll be allowed to pull. And Javier Tebas, La Liga's president, is being pretty adamant about making sure Barcelona can't find any loopholes in the current, wage restrictions and economic cost controls. So they're definitely in a tight spot. And as you pointed out, what they really needed this year was a deep run in Europe to get a good bit of money from the knockout stages. And obviously they botched that and didn't get to do it. So yeah, there are a lot of questions that remain on both the financial side and when it comes to the scandal that, unfortunately for fans of any side, we won't really get to know what's going on with that refereeing scandal for a long time yet. But it could be yet another thing that hurts their financial situation. We'll find out in time, I guess.
Looking back at when their financial crisis first started and the reports started coming in, as a complete layman of football management, my first thought was, well, okay, bin all the old players in the team and just recruit from the academy. Like, no money spent, take a couple of years of finishing fourth, because you have La Masia. I mean, who else has that?
Right.
And instead, they've signed 30-year-olds, Aubameyang, Lewandowski, Marcos Alonso. It seems like they're not even trying looking in from the outside. They're still doing those same stupid mistakes, just with free players right now. They're not paying the extra 100 million transfers fee like they did with Coutinho. Do you think this approach is sort of viable for the future?
Well, it could be. You know, it's tough. So I don't think it's even necessarily fair to argue is it viable or not. It depends on what happens in the short term. What you have is when Laporta came in, he had a couple of paths he could have taken, right? He could do what you said, which is say, hey, we know we're in a tight spot financially. And in order to create a more sustainable model for the club in the, let's say, the medium term, like 5 years or so, let's sell some of the players that are on big wages or at least get them off the books, however we can. And then let's rely on youth to fill out the squad. What that could mean is we're not going to be contending for any silverware. You know, maybe we'll finish second, third, somewhere within a Champions League spot. So we'll still be fine in the big picture, but we're hurting ourselves in the short run. That's at least the risk. Alternatively, he went down another path that said, we really need to win right now. Because we're in such a tough financial spot, if we don't bring in a good bit of money from Europe, if we don't start winning silverware that attracts fans, that attracts players that want to come back to this club, then we're going to be in a big spot in the short run. So I don't think we know yet whether or not it's a good strategy. I think it's viable enough if the short-term results come. Now, the European exits have hurt them big time because they were really banking on these investments, like Lewandowski specifically. They were banking on that being able to bring in a deep run in the Champions League, and they didn't get that. And make no mistake, that's going to be a huge hit for them when we go into this next summer. That's going to be a real pain point for them. But, you know, was it the right move? Maybe. If they're able to, you know, looks like they're going to win the league. If they're able to do well in Europe next year, and really at the end of the day, it's one of those unknown things. If this season and next season they're able to do better than they would have if they hadn't signed these guys and if they had gone with youth, then it's a win. And of course, they're going to sell it as that because that's part of what every club wants to do is make it seem like they made the right decision. But the truth is, we can't know because we don't know what the alternative would have been. If they hadn't signed Rafinha, for example, if they had just let him go to Chelsea, if they hadn't signed Koundé, would they have still performed as well as they did in Europe? I don't know that they could have done much worse. So on the financial side there, I don't know if it would have made a huge difference. They might not have won La Liga, though, and what kind of a hit does that take to their short-term goals and to their larger financial goals? Hard to say. So at the end of the day, people who like Laporta will say, you know, it was the best decision for the near term. People who don't like him will say, oh, it's killing the club long term. Truth is, we can't know for sure in the short term, and we won't know about long term planning for a few more years.
I feel like this short termism is also involving the fans, not just with Barcelona, mm-hmm. but with Real Madrid mm-hmm. as well, because they have notoriously one of the most spoiled fan bases in the world. Mm. And it seems like these two clubs are in a position where they need to take, like everyone, a few years, step back, mm-hmm. and redevelop themselves from the inside out. But instead, they're choosing the easy route, which is the Super League.
Mm-hmm.
So, moving on to Barca's main rivals, Real, obviously Florentino Perez is out for blood with Barcelona's new scandal. But at the same time, his club aren't doing so well. Mm-hmm. It's been reported that they have almost the same money issues as Barcelona. They're just a bit better off. Is this just a facade to promote the Super League, or are they really running out of money?
Yeah, that's the right question. And there, so it's probably a bit of both, to be honest. You know, so we know a couple of things. We know that COVID hurt Madrid, just like every other club in Spain. We also know that in the few years prior to that, talking about 2017 to 2020, Madrid made better investments than Barcelona. You know, Barcelona had their most profitable years in the 2010s. They also had the highest wage bill in Europe. So most of their profits were countered by the way that they were managing their finances. Madrid didn't suffer from that quite as much. Now, clubs like Sevilla and Atletico Madrid, they made the same mistakes as Barcelona. Madrid did pretty well. You know, they sold Cristiano Ronaldo when he was still, you could say, in his prime. I know he was aged up in his 30s by then, but he was still in his prime, still very profitable. And they were able to reinvest into a young squad. So when COVID hit, every team in Spain was in a really bad spot. The ones that were at the biggest risk were those clubs who had already had a bloated wage bill and now had their revenues cut. So Atletico Madrid, Sevilla, Barcelona, those clubs are in the biggest pickle at the moment, so to speak. Madrid obviously has a lot of issues with debt, and just everybody's revenues were hit big time during the lockdown, but they're able to come out of it a bit faster. To your question about the Super League, that's the thing, man. Whether it's Perez or Laporta, anybody who has this larger agenda to push the Super League, you almost have to look at every statement they're making about their club finances through that lens. So interpret everything Perez says as, you know, his larger agenda, his underlying MO is to push a Super League that will give him and Barcelona and Juventus and other Super League proponents more control over revenue as compared to the Champions League. So I have no doubt that they are not making as much profit as they were before the lockdown. They're certainly not bringing in as much total revenue. So that's certainly true. Their debt issues have been well known for over a decade. At the same time, they were about to blow, you know, a ton of money to get Mbappe last summer. They're going to make a big signing this summer. I have little to no doubt about that. They've got to replenish the squad. So I think with everything else, it's half truths with Perez. Yes, they, you know, they're not making as much money as they were before the lockdown. They're also doing all right, and they don't need a Super League to survive right now. They need it to just boost revenues back to where they were before the lockdown. So a little bit of speaking out of both sides of his mouth, I think, and too many half truths in a lot of what he's saying.
Another thing about the Super League is that they are currently directing all the fans' anger through their discourse at Javier Tebas, the leader of La Liga, mm-hmm. which to me seems like a man who wants to empower the league.
Mm.
At the same time, taking Barcelona and Real Madrid down a peg in order to create a more competitive league, which would in turn, in the long run, help Barca and Real.
Mm-hmm.
How can the fans be made to see this and not just focus on the short term?
Oh, you see, so you mentioned this before. It's this short-term modality of thought that a lot of fans have, and a lot of the big clubs have in general. It's the, we have to win now. If you really listen to the language around Madrid and Barcelona, so much of it is fear-driven about unknowns. You know, hey, oh, if we're not winning the Champions League every other year, then we're going to lose millions of fans and we won't be able to compete with England anymore, and da, 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 da. Which is a fair enough theory, but it hasn't been proven at all in the past. I think, you know, I could talk a lot about Tebas and his weird agenda with Barcelona specifically, but that might be a separate conversation. I do think that in general, and we saw this before he was even president, one of his primary goals is to make the whole league more competitive, to create more parity in the league. And he, when it comes to the way he thinks about economics, he realizes that if you want to boost the other 18 plus teams in the league, in the short term, that has to come at the expense of the big two. You know, there's only a certain amount of revenue that's coming in the door. The pie is only so big right now. So if you want to distribute monies across the rest of the league, it has to come from those that are making over half of the money so far. And this is what happened with the 2015 TV deal. Now, if you go back 8 years ago to that deal, the reason that Madrid was suing the league, the reason that Barcelona and Madrid were so against it, is because they knew they were going to lose money in the short term. But what you saw over the next 5-6 years is that as other teams got more money given to them through that new TV deal, the collective bargaining agreement, the revenues of the big two went up as well. It's like you said, in the short term, there was a hit specifically to one of their revenue streams, the TV deal, but the pie got bigger. So everybody ended up making more money. So, you know, again, it goes back to how Perez can say two things that are half truths. On one hand, by increasing the amount of money that went to the rest of the league, yes, Madrid and Barcelona did lose money because the slice of their pie got smaller. The other truth that they won't say as blatantly is because the pie got bigger, it was a net win, even for the big two. So how do you get fans to see that? Ooh, man, I don't know, you know, because fans are mostly listening to their club. And if we know anything about, it's not unique to Barcelona and Madrid, but if we know anything about these top tier clubs, they're marketing machines, and they can spin out a lot of narratives that fans will just eat up without thinking too critically. And, you know, you add in the way that Tebas is having other issues with Barcelona, and it's hard to believe anything he's doing is legitimate. It's a tricky spot. It's pretty frustrating for me as a fan of the league as a whole, because I think the short-term hit to the big two would strengthen the whole league in the near term and then strengthen them in the long run as well. But that's a big ask of anybody to think beyond the short-term losses.
Speaking of fans being able to think critically and maybe put the welfare of others before their own, mm-hmm. I'd like to move on to a set of fans who I really pity, and namely Valencia.
Oh.
They find their club in the relegation zone, and I've recently written an article about Peter Lim's presidency. And it just looks absolutely bleak. He's treating the club as a cash cow and taking out money to fund his other businesses. Mm-hmm. He's horribly corrupt, and he rubs shoulders with some very unsavory people. Mm-hmm. Michael, how can the fans get this horrible man out of their club? And is there any chance that Spain's FA or the league themselves will intervene?
Mm. I did read your article. I thought it was excellent, by the way. Oh, yeah. I feel for fans. This is one of the top five biggest clubs in Spain, and they have a real shot of going down. And it's not because of anything the players have done or the managers have done in recent years. It's just about their management, their ownership. So, yeah, what can they do? I mean, they've tried everything, right? They've done public campaigns on social media. They've done protests to his office, to the stadium. They've done protests during matches. I can't imagine how helpless they must feel knowing that they've used all of the avenues they can. They've even hurt the club financially by boycotting matches. What more can you do, you know? As you said, it's an owner that seems at best disinterested in what happens in the club. And at worst, it seems he's almost trying to sabotage them for some sort of personal gain. And then you have family members of his that are coming out on social media and saying, in effect, you know, we can do whatever we want with this club. This is our club. You know, fans don't get to control what's going on. So what are you supposed to do with that? You know, what can you really expect a fan base to do? I see a lot of Los Che supporters who are almost hoping that the club gets relegated, because then maybe he'll be willing to sell. Maybe he'll have less of a reason to hold on to the club. Even then, I'm not sure he would, because you know they're going to come back up in a year. So it's one of those few areas in the league right now that I feel pretty hopeless about. I don't see any reason, any incentive from his perspective to sell the club or to get rid of it. Fans are doing everything they can to make their voices heard. Is the league going to get involved? I doubt it. He has pretty good relationships with most of the decision makers within the federation. So, and he's not doing anything illegal, right? I mean, there's no law that says there's no law against mismanagement unless there's some sort of unethical behavior happening with finances or anything like that. Players are getting paid. So he's not breaking any laws. He's not breaking any rules. And Spain, unfortunately, is not known for its innovation or for its hard stance against unethical behavior. So as pessimistic as it sounds, I don't see, at least in the near term, I don't see a way out of it. And it's pretty heartbreaking.
Before we move on, I just like to say that my heart goes out to all Valencia fans out there. And I really do hope you get this snail, mm-hmm. this Limax out of your club.
Yes, yes.
Another club that's fallen on rough times is Sevilla.
Oh.
You know, with Monchi leaving for a while and joining Roma and then coming back, the club has made some pretty bad investments. Their usual great recruitment was substituted by indifferent signings mm-hmm. on big wages who flopped. But now Monchi is back. And my question is, can he do a repeat of his excellent business in the early 2000s with mm-hmm. Sergio Ramos, mm-hmm. Dani Alves? Or has the landscape of football changed so much that Sevilla cannot maintain their model anymore? Because mm-hmm. when we think back to the early 2000s, Sevilla were kind of the only club in Europe, at least big enough to be noticeable, who are employing the same scouting mm-hmm. methods that some other clubs employ today, because they were signing all the crazy young wonder kids that That's nobody right. had ever heard of. But now it's Brighton and the whole of the Bundesliga are doing the same. So is there a space at the table for Sevilla, or do they have to have a huge rethink about their model?
Yeah, man, this is one of the most exciting questions for me, I think, because in a way, Sevilla is suffering from their own success. As you said, they were one of the early pioneers in this model, and so many clubs have copied it now. And so there's a saturation, an oversaturation of clubs that are operating with early Monchi model of find these low investment, high potential, high upside talents, and knowing that they're going to sell them for a big profit. So Sevilla has never scouted these talents thinking these are the players that are going to take us to a, you know, regular Champions League spot. That's never been the model. It's always been a financial model. But now there are more clubs doing the same thing. So, and there are, you know, more advanced scouting networks all across Europe. It's tough. I think he's an enigmatic figure as well, because he's the brains behind all of Sevilla's early success, and really, again, one of the pioneer thinkers behind what's such a common model in Germany and France now. But during his second tenure, it's almost been the opposite, man. You know, most of his big signings have been flops. For every, you know, Koundé that you get, you're getting three other overpriced and overexpensive, you know, wingers or attacking midfielders who aren't needed. It's been bad. There's probably a narrative that hasn't been fully formed, but that's been in my head about Sevilla in the mid 2010s had a lot of success in Europe. They were doing pretty well in the league. They were at least sustaining those top six finishes, and their financial situation improved massively. And part of that also it was going back to the 2015 La Liga TV deal, but their revenues increased a lot. And they made a very similar mistake to Barcelona, where rather than take that added revenue to strengthen their current model, they spent big. It's the same thing Atletico Madrid did. They hadn't seen that amount of money before in the past, and they used it to try to catch up to the big two, maybe a little bit too fast. So what happens when you get to the lockdown again in 2020 is all of those bloated wages have to be paid, and they don't have any money to reinvest in young players. So they're kind of in this weird, really painful spot of being stuck with an overpriced team on bloated wages that now they're too old to sell and move on, and no money to invest in young talent. So what do you do with that? I think you kind of have to ride it out for a couple of years and wait for these guys to retire, or, you know, cut them off your books, knowing that's going to be a financial hit, which is fine, but it's not going to help you go back to your former model of then using that money to reinvest. You also have to ask the question at this point of, if you're looking at the last, whatever it's been since Monchi came back, 4 years, 5 years, does he still have it? I know that's kind of an uncomfortable question that we don't want to ask, but does he still have that gift? His spell in Italy did not go well. I think it's very fair to say that his second tenure in Spain hasn't been anywhere near what his first pass was. Does he still have that? And if not, does Sevilla want to find somebody else to replicate that? Do they want to start thinking about a different financial model where they're, you know, trying to become a top four regular? I don't know. But it's definitely one of those teams that in the next two or three seasons, as Spain's larger economy starts to level out and recover from the lockdown, I'm very curious to see what they decide, because if they can't keep into that top four regular Champions League space race that they've been in for the last close to a decade, they're going to have a pretty big reversion, because there's no shortage of clubs that would love to jump in and take their spot, Villarreal, Real Sociedad specifically. I think they're at a real inflection point right now where they're either going to try to close the gap on Atletico Madrid, or they're going to fall back to become a, you know, 6-8 mid-table competing side in the short term. And I don't know that they have the financial sustainability to manage that.
Since we just talked about some doom and gloom in the Spanish league, I'd like to counterbalance that with some smaller teams who are challenging the big boys and proving to them that you don't need to spend inordinate amounts of money. Mm-hmm. To be successful. And the three that I like to mention is Real Sociedad, Athletic Bilbao, and Villarreal. Now, since there is a big reshuffle in La Liga, especially with TV money and empowering the smaller clubs, my question to you is, can you see any of them sort of kicking on and pushing on from their sort of Europa League spots and actually winning something in Spain, mm-hmm. especially with a focus on Athletic Bilbao, because what many people don't realize that they are the third most decorated team in Spain, and they've won more Copa del Rey than even Real Madrid.
Yeah, man, I'm so glad you're bringing them up. I think the short answer is yes. I think all of those clubs, and I'd probably add, you know, a couple others, but those three more than anyone else in the league, they should be competing for cup trophies, and they are. I mean, obviously, Real Sociedad just won. Bilbao has been Athletic has been to finals recently. So I think in terms of chasing Copa del Rey, absolutely, they should be competing for that. And all three of them should be competing in Europe. I continue to be so disappointed with how Real Sociedad is failing in the Europa League year over year. I think they're a better team than that. The thing that I want to point out about those three, and maybe this is what makes them different from, say, Sevilla, even Atletico, is they know their lane. They have had a 10 to 12 year plan to get to where they are, which involves a heavy focus on the academy, building a new stadium, strengthening local support. And these are not huge clubs, right? You know, none of them are ever dreaming of winning the league. They're being realistic about that. Most of them probably don't even have regular Champions League finishes, you know, top four finish as their objectives. But that's okay, because it's a long-term plan. And that's really what makes them different from, say, Sevilla or even Atletico, who will mortgage their medium to long-term future for short-term success. And that's why those clubs are in massive debt with bloated wages. And the three clubs you mentioned are in great financial positions, despite having such small markets to really compete within. So, yeah, I think there's something special, or at least unique, about these clubs in Spain being willing to acknowledge what their realistic objectives are in the near term and what they can really try to achieve long term. I think if you have a